direct from the web, it's Billy Masters Live. And now, please welcome your host, Billy Masters.
Oh my God, it's like doing a real show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Billy Masters Live. I am, of course, your host, Billy Masters. Oh, am I a little too hot here? No, it's okay. And today is, thank you, Monica. Today is Thursday, May 13th, 2021. We are now, I don't even realize. When we hit a year, I stopped counting how many days we had been in quarantine. But it's like a year and 3 months, 2.5 months. I don't know. It's going to be forever. So for those of you who have been watching since the beginning, I've kind of evolved. I told you when we started this show that I really wanted it to be a very interactive show and to get people's different people's point of view. And we really had invited people watching to join in and just come on and be kind of like a virtual talk show. And here's what I realized. People sitting at home watching and enjoying don't want to be seen on camera. So, therefore, we kind of shifted, and I ended up doing these long-form celebrity interviews, which has been a lot of fun. But here's what's happened. People are now getting back to work. People, life is kind of resuming. And to tell you the truth, I've talked to most of the people I want to, except for the ones who said no. And now I don't even want to talk to them. So I went back to Steve Kometko will know this, that I don't know, like 5 years ago, maybe, I had an idea for kind of a gay version of The View. And it would be gay men of different generations, backgrounds, and views. And of course, I would host because that's what I do. And so we did this was it 2 weeks ago? Yeah, I guess it was 2 weeks ago with Bruce Vilanch, Richard J. Alexander, and Johnny Beauchamp, and people loved it. So what we're going to do is I'm going to mix up every other week. I'll do a panel show, and on the alternate weeks, I will do a regular interview show, and we'll see till I get bored with that. So today's panel is quite glittery indeed. And I'm actually going to talk to my first guest a little bit more. Well, I'm going to talk to all of them because I want to find out what they've been doing. So our first guest has been here twice before. And frankly, he's one of the reasons I started doing anything, started doing my columns, started doing this kind of a show, because he was one of the first people to join E! When E! Launched and was a constant presence on the red carpet for years and years and an inspiration to so many people and also really fucking hot. So please welcome Steve Kometko.
Thank you, Billy.
Are you, Stevie?
I'm doing fine. Thanks very much.
Are you still in Chicago?
Yes, I am. And fortunately, the weather, as I was mentioning a little while ago, has finally turned spring-like. Temperatures in the 30s overnight. And that is not too pleasant. But today, gorgeous day. One of those perfect spring days.
And not windy?
No, it's not. We've had some windy days, but not. They call Chicago the Windy City, but it's not because of climatological factors. The reason it's called the Windy City, two reasons. Around the turn of the last century, there were so many political conventions here that one of the journalists, because of all the hot air, dumped the Windy City.
I didn't know that.
Yes, that's the primary reason. And the secondary reason is because Chicagoans love their city and love to brag about it. It does get windy on occasion with Lake Michigan right on our, eastern edge. So it can be called the Windy City for the obvious reason. But it's really because of politicians and hot air.
Wow, because I've spent a lot of time in downtown Chicago, which in the winter in particular can be really kind of frigid.
It can be a bitch.
Yeah, it really is when the wind comes in. Oh, yeah. It's awful. How are you doing during the pandemic? I haven't talked to you for 6-8 months.
It's been a while. I haven't handled the pandemic that well. I isolate, you know, as a recovering alcoholic, you know. I just have to stay away from anything that might ease those depression. That only, you know, alcohol only makes it worse. And so I tend to go to a depressing place, a depressive state. And so without places to go and people to see and living alone, only my dogs keep me sober and keep me occupied.
I found this week, for some reason, we had a lot of rainy days here in Boston, and the only way I can survive is getting out for a walk. And I basically was spending like 20 hours a day just sitting on my bed, watching TV or typing or whatever. And I said, this isn't good. I just have to do something. But there's so little to do. We have no options.
Well, I've gotten caught up on so many movies. prior to this year's Oscars, I think this is the first time this has ever happened. I saw every movie.
Wow.
The Screen Actors Guild sends them to you. So or you can stream them.
Right.
Every single one. So that was nice.
I know, it's been amazing. I'm a SAG member, so I had all, but I really found it very difficult to focus throughout things. I mean, I think that if a movie is really good, maybe it will hold your interest. But when I'm streaming, I'm like, oh, I can make a call. Let me go make a sandwich. You know what? Let's take a nap and pick it up where I left off. So that happened to me a lot.
Well, and this week, Turner Classic Movies is having their annual Classic Film Festival. If I don't sit down and watch a film at night when they're on, I'll record it. So this morning, I started my day with Looking for Mr. Goodbar, which
was
such a good movie. I don't think I'd seen it since it was in the theaters. And it's amazing.
Yeah, me too.
The new faces at the time that were in that movie, Tom Berenger and Richard Gere, Diane Keaton was new at the time, Brian Dennehy. It was a Tuesday Weld.
wow.
It was a good movie, really good movie.
It held up.
Yes, it did.
Cool. Steve, I'm going to put you backstage and just going to go to our next panelist, and we'll bring you all back shortly.
Okay, I'll have a cigarette.
Good, you do that. But don't drink, whatever you do.
All right.
Our next panelist is somebody who I love, even though I don't really keep up with him, although I keep up with him on social media, but I don't really call. But when I moved to L.A. 20 years ago, he was one of the first people who made a point of becoming friends with me and introducing me to people, inviting me to parties to his house, and introducing me to some very fabulous people, I might add. At the time, he had written a book which I loved. Oh, God, Ben, I can't remember the name of the book, but you'll tell me. Ben Patrick Johnson, at the time, was known as like the voiceover king for movies and TV shows. You knew his voice. He had done a short stint on air and then had written a book about it. And now he's the morning host on KGAY, 106.5 FM in Palm Springs, one of the nation's leading LGBT radio outlets. And of course, he's always been an advocate and a public speaker and an all-around good guy. And again, not bad to look at. Ben Patrick Johnson. Hi, sweetie.
Hi, honey. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I'm thinking to myself, I think the last time we talked, I was hosting a radio show here in Boston. Right. And so I think you were like out at a bar or something in Venice Beach or something. It was just the most bizarre thing. But I know. But, you know, we do what we need to do. And I'm trying to remember, who did I meet at your house who was on Dancing with the Stars?
Do you know, there could have been several of them.
You know, I don't think it was Carrie Ann, but it might have been, I don't know. It was one of the girls.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
But I met so many people through you, and you were always so sweet to me. Oh, yeah. And you were great. And it was one of those things that you would say to people, like at 7 o'clock, what are you doing at 10? Come over.
Yeah.
And that's how I like it.
75 people would come over.
Yeah. And it would be crazy. And people would come and go in shifts. People came after bars or on their way to bars. Yeah. So, but your life has changed significantly since then. You're now in, are you living in Palm Springs?
I'm living in Palm Springs. And Palm Springs is a much smaller media market than Los Angeles. But being a somewhat of a big fish in a small pond has its advantages as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to do what I do from a platform that is new to me, doing morning radio. But yeah. I get to do all my, it's Kege is, we're really at the heart of the LGBT community here. And those people who know Palm Springs, we've got a big LGBT community. I get to play a dynamic and hopefully vital role in that. As I parade guests through, people that really matter.
Do people call in?
No, we don't do
calls. Do you take calls?
I actually track my show ahead of time. There's a big secret.
Oh, really?
In Palm Springs.
It's all right.
I do the before, including the weather, because the weather doesn't change. So
hi. Sunny and hot.
Yeah, but the show is very tightly produced and put together. So it would be difficult to do it in real time. It takes about 8 hours to do each four-hour show. We do that.
You know, I have to say that started doing this, one of the templates for doing this show was what you were doing, and I forget what it was called. What was that show that you were?
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's okay. And you were doing it from your home, home studio.
Yeah.
And again, I remember saying to you, God, this looks so great. And I couldn't build this. And you're like, no, so much of it is virtual and you can, it's not the worst thing. And you had two cameras, which of course I'm not going to bother doing, but I could. but it was, you really were ahead of your time in terms of really DIY.
For all these
people during the pandemic who had to learn these skills, you already had it.
Well, yes. I mean, thank you for the compliment. I've had to learn how to translate everything I do, which is writing, which is doing voiceovers, which is acting as an interviewer. And
what was the name of the book?
The name of the book was In and Out in Hollywood. That was the first one.
Right.
Yeah.
I loved that book.
Thank you. But to fit it into a four-hour block on the radio and knowing that people are not going to listen to you for 4 hours, they're going to hear 10 minutes or 15 minutes tops if you're lucky. And you have to hit them hard, hit them quick, and let them get on with their day and hopefully leave them with some kind of message that will affect them in a positive way as well as entertaining them.
Yeah, I think that's really hard. I think that videos tend to have a little bit longer eyeballs, but even them are maybe 20 minutes. And it has to be standalone minutes that wherever somebody picks something up, if it's a live stream, that they don't feel excluded because, oh, I missed the first 20 minutes, so why bother?
Difficult. We tease and tease and tease what's coming up. And you get crazy because you say the same thing over and over and over. But you need to because people are not, in 5 minutes, we'll have this story. And in 2 minutes, we'll have this story. And stick around for this story. Because you have to. Because you don't have that extended time with people, as you're talking about in videos.
Yeah, I remember you're very popular. I remember when I was hosting LA Pride for, I think it was 8 years in a row, I would do like a 6 hour shift and friends would say to me, you have to go back out there and reintroduce yourself. You're going on the assumption that people are sitting there for 6 hours and they're walking by. And I never was good at that, about saying, hi, welcome back. I'm Billy Masters. I said, oh, it's so hacky. But radio people are really good at it because it's part of their format. Yeah.
We reintroduce our guests every 2 to 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And
what they're promoting. I mean, there is that blurb that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like it? Are you enjoying it?
Oh, my God, I love it. It's I barely get a chance to sleep because I'm carrying a lot of it because it's a pandemic. The staff at the station has cut way back. And
I'm
my own producer now on the show, which means I booked.
Which I would like, though. Don't you like?
I like. Well, I'm a control freak, so I like that aspect.
That's what I'm saying, right? Like me.
But it's a lot of work. It just really is a lot of work. And then also, writing bits and trying to be a quarter of the way funny You know, when you have slept 3 hours, it's tough.
And what time do you go on?
The show airs from 6 a.m. Yeah, right. to 10 a.m. And people can stream it at kg1065.com. We're not geofenced, so you can get us anywhere in the world.
Cool.
And we're also on most of the major podcast apps.
Cool. Benji, I'm going to put you backstage. I'll bring you out in a minute.
Sounds good.
And our last guest, he's been here at least twice, maybe three times. Mark McKillop, Broadway. Well, I can't say Broadway performer. I thought I could say Broadway performer. What's interesting enough, while he is not a Broadway performer, you've seen him on the road in a million Broadway shows. He is, I think it's 2 years in a row, the top fundraiser for Broadway Bears, which we'll be doing another show for them coming up soon. The Jerry Mitchell, Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS benefit, and all around good guy and Canadian. So for our friends up north, well, I don't know, you can't say ciao, hola, whatever. No, that's south. I don't care. Anyway, again, another one not bad to look at. You know, I gotta stop making some ugly friends so I'm the cute one in the show. Anyway, Mark McKillop. Hey, Mark.
Hi. Yeah, that's my running joke whenever I do a one-man show, is I'm not Broadway's Mark McKillop.
I know. I didn't know that. You posted that recently on Facebook, and I'm like, oh, my God, all this time, I had no idea.
I've done a million tours, but I just haven't done Broadway yet. Every time I go on a Broadway, I go on a tour is when, like, a show that I feel like I would be good for opens on Broadway. And then I come back, and the thing about anytime you cast a musical is that, like, whoever originates the role, like, because even the role that I did in Anastasia on tour, they changed things around for me on the road show because
to play to your strengths
didn't have the bass solo in it, and so they gave that to me, so they switched things around. So when you have to replace that role, it has to be that person. You're basically looking for their replacement,
right?
So that's what my running joke is, that I'm not Broadway's Mark McKillop.
And is it still true that money on the road is better than money on Broadway?
It can be, yeah. Especially,
but you still also, in your case, you have to maintain an apartment and stuff while you're away, so you still have expenses.
Well, I have to find someone who, like, enjoys my decor and wants to live here.
I think there's quite a number of people who sign up for that. Do you have anything coming up?
No.
Just checking.
That's my favorite thing, is when people are like, oh, Broadway's reopening September 14th. And I was like, that doesn't mean I have a job.
Right. Well, first off, I might point out, I am not Broadway's Mark McKillop.
I am not Broadway's Mark McKillop.
Let's talk about when the bus and truck tour of Anastasia reopens.
Well, that is reopening. I know it was happening for a long time. When we closed because of the pandemic, we were supposed to have like 8 more months of touring. But the plan was always to have 8 more months of touring, then it was going to shut down, and then it was going to reopen as a non-union tour. So that was always the plan. Mm-hmm. But it just happened a little bit earlier because of the pandemic and that. So that is going out non-union. Unfortunately, I won't be able to be a part of it.
Right, so. Of course. I was asking the other two how they're doing during the pandemic. I kind of know how you're doing because we talk occasionally and you post a lot. And there are some things, obviously, we can't talk about, but you're in New York and New York is opening up again and people are going out. And how does that feel to you? Does it feel like the city is coming back to life?
I mean, the city won't be back until Broadway's back. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. I giggled because I saw people posting things through the pandemic, like the New York Post, which is trash. They posted some articles saying, to save New York City post-pandemic, we have to save the failing Hudson Yards project. And I was people don't come to New York City to go to a glorified mall. That's not what we need to save. I was like, 26% of all tourists come and see a Broadway show. That's what we need to save. It's Broadway. When Broadway returns to New York, we'll be back. But there's been nice things that have come from the pandemic. I mean, I love the outdoor little huts that they've built on the street that you can eat outside now. Outside.
Yeah, they're like little like igloos or something.
I mean, they're cool. I mean, I feel like they give like Ninth Avenue and Hell's Kitchen like a very like, if you can even compare it to that, like a European vibe, like just like dining out fresco. Like it's kind of cool. I like it. I'm happy they changed the ordinances, and so now it's year round. So they'll be sticking around.
Mm-hmm.
Urban is yeah, a nice. It,
and of course, those of us who like to drive in New York, that will be so much fun.
Oh, I can't even imagine having a car in this city. There's things I won't. When I was on tour with West Side Story, we were in London for 7 weeks, so I got to ride around on Barclay bikes, and that was really fun.
Oh yeah, that would be great.
But like, I will never get on a city bike in New York City. Like that
one. Oh, see, I have so many friends that live on those.
No, absolutely not. People do not know how to drive in New York City. You're lucky to be safe inside like a taxi or a Lyft or anything like that, like a not get hit. Like, I just know my luck. I will be like on my bike and be like probably listening to like what's that song, making my way downtown, and then I'll be like.
That's you know, I have not told this story on this show, but fans know I'm very close friends with Sherry Shepherd. And when she was auditioning to be on get the job on The View, they had given her a choice. I shouldn't tell this story on her, but they gave her a choice of a car, car allowance or hair allowance. And Sherry's a black girl who loves her wigs. So she took the hair.
Yeah.
And she was living, you know, maybe, I don't know, 10 blocks away from the studio. And I said to her, you should get a bike because you're trying to get in better shape. And that would be great. And it's only 10 blocks. And, you know, that will be fun. No, and she came
with hair on.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Right. We'll put the hair on the helmet. And she came in one day all black and blue. And she's like, my friend Billy. So I said, oh, no, told me to do this. And she was riding her bicycle on the sidewalk.
Oh, well.
And somebody opened like a door and she went flying. And I said, well, I didn't tell you to ride the bike on the sidewalk. Although I don't think the street is any safer for bikes, although there are now these bike lanes.
There are those. And honestly, I mean, being on tour this past pre-pandemic, a lot of have these like cool electronic like motorized scooters.
Yes, I've seen them. They're like mopedy. Yeah.
Or Lyft or Uber app or something like that. So I loved those. They were dangerous after a few cocktails in the local gay bar, but I mean, I had a good time.
Oh, all right, Mark, I'm bringing on the piano.
All right.
Hold on a second. Okay. Ben and Steve, and I'm going to move y'all around. Okay, guys. So as people watching this know, the only way I've kept my sanity through the pandemic is by getting out and walking. Now, the CDC announced that masks are no longer needed outdoors. However, when I've tried to do this, I have gotten the dirtiest looks from people. And, you know, this I keep now a mask around my neck and I just pull it up if someone's coming towards me because I just don't want to hear it. And I'm really kind of torn because on one hand, I want to follow the science, which is saying that masks outside really are no more effective than not wearing a mask. But on the other hand, I think we're living in a culture where people are really quick to judge. So I'm curious, has anybody had an experience like this? And how do you feel about this? I'm looking at Mark because Mark lives in New York. So Mark, go ahead.
I mean, I have been the king of just laying in bed and not doing anything for this entire pandemic. People are like, what's new? And I'm like, nothing. I've just literally watched all of the Netflix and that's been my life.
You like to go and spend some time with Steve in Chicago?
I love Chicago. I've had a lot of fun there.
All right.
Boys Town's a good town.
All right. No, you can't bring Steve out to a bar though.
Sorry?
You can't leave Steve, bring Steve out to a bar. No. Temptation,
oh, that's
Steve.
True. That's true. Oh. That's true. No, I haven't been outside yet without a mask. But I mean, I obviously I trust the science. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I have both my vaccinations. I got the second shot last week. I trust the science. You hear so many things. So it's kind of like trying to decipher and move your way through like what the CDC is saying, which obviously I believe. But then you also hear the CDC talking about like mutant strands and variations of the virus. So it's like they're like mask up for that reason. So, I mean, I'm just listening to what they're saying. If they say take it off, I'm probably keep one in my pocket just because you know you're gonna come along some such a situation that you just want to throw one on, and it's your own safety. You know what? I'm probably going to wear masks in the winter moving forward anyway, because I didn't get any colds this entire time. So that's probably something I'm
You've been
adopt.
Sitting on your bed. What are you going to catch?
That's also true.
Carpal tunnel syndrome? I mean, that's it. Steve, where do you weigh in on this?
where do I weigh in on this? I guess I've gotten kind of used to it, although there's been a couple of times where I've gone to the grocery store and I've forgotten my mask. They'll say to you, they're very good about saying to you, sir, your mask. And then you go, shit. Then you have to go all the way back out to the car to get it.
Right.
I don't know. I think what Mark said is true. The statistics show that a lot fewer colds and flu are being passed from person to person because we're all wearing masks. But it really doesn't bother me one way or the other. It's the least we can do to get rid of this thing.
Right. No, I agree with you. And I think that people will get on board as the numbers kind of bear this out. But I think people are really quick to point fingers at other people for whatever reason. Have you had your shot, Steve?
Yes, I am fully vaccinated. I'm vaxxed, I'm waxed, everything. I'm ready to... I even took a trip.
For sax.
Where have you gone, Steve?
I went to Arizona about a month ago. A week. So I have some nieces there, and because we haven't seen each other for such a long time, I wanted to go out and see them. So my brother and I and his husband all packed up and went to O'Hare, and everybody had masks on. It was really, I was surprised at how compliant everyone was being. Of course, this is the nice Midwest, so everybody was very compliant, and there were no issues on the plane. It really didn't bother me at all.
Yeah, I've flown a number of times. I know, Mark, you have as well. I haven't had any issues. Have you?
I mean, that was early in the pandemic, too, when I was flying.
Right.
So I had, like, the N95. I had the face shield. Like, I was not any chances. I mean, to be honest, even, like, when they say, like, you can go outside with a mask, I kind of enjoy having a mask and sunglasses on and being like, no one knows who I am. Like, it's kind of nice just to, like, being able to hide and like slip around in Hell's Kitchen when I'm running errands.
Benji, what about you? Have you been vaccinated?
Yes, I have. I got both my vaccines. I actually had COVID back in June.
I didn't know
of last
that.
Year.
Wow.
And, I'm in a kind of a unique position because, again, being in the media in a smaller market, where I go and what I see, people are aware of my presence and
sure,
what's my P's and Q's.
Yeah,
I've had experiences both where I've forgotten the mask. I think nearly all of us have at some point, you know,
yeah,
and have been told, oh, no, go get your mask. And the other times we will just I was at a restaurant and it was a long walk from my car to the restaurant, many blocks. And I realized as I was getting there, I didn't have a mask. And I thought, well, what am I going to do? And I asked the host at the restaurant, you know, do you have one for me? And he just said, go sit down. Don't worry about it. We're in a unique position here in California right now, because last week we had the honor of having the lowest new infection rate in the country. And at the same time, our governor, Gavin Newsom, has just gone on television yesterday and said we're going to open up wide on June 15th. Now, this may or may not be a good thing. The reason that he's been kind of motivated to do this, I believe, is because there's been such a backlash against him for the way things have gone down during COVID
Absolutely.
Here in California, that he's facing a recall election. People want him out as if he were the one who caused things. So right now he's doing everything he can to appease that crowd and hold on to his seat. At the same time, I have a medical advisor on the show here once a week who studies COVID a lot, and he's very smart and has eyeglasses, and he comes in and, you know, and he was saying to me, sorry?
No, I'm just laughing at you.
saying to me that we are
and I was putting on my glasses just to make myself look smart.
Now I'll ask you.
Yeah, don't ask me. Go ahead.
Medical advisor was saying to me that we may be in for some hurt, and we may be fooling ourselves thinking that we're going to get rid of our masks anytime soon. The issue is that as many as 30% of us in America And not to point fingers, but it is predominantly Republican males and evangelicals are resistant to getting the vaccine. And it's right. both in red states and blue states. And the problem sure. with that is that we will not reach the magic number of about 80% for herd immunity. And so there will be, it will trickle and there will still be coronavirus everywhere. So, and their variants will still grow. So we may be in for the long haul on this. I think it's soon to celebrate.
Yeah, I agree with you. I remember last summer how numbers really got good. And I said, you know, that's all well and good because people are outdoors. But once the fall comes, that's when you're really going to see what happens, which brings up our next topic, which is that Broadway's been announced. It's going to open for full capacity starting September 14th. And on the 14th, four shows have already announced that they are reopening: Chicago, Wicked, Lion King, and Hamilton. And practically every other show has announced a date opening shortly thereafter. So my question to you, would you be feeling comfortable going to a fully capacitated theater? And I guess when it comes to Mark, would he feel comfortable performing in to a full capacity audience? But actually, let's start with Mark. Mark, you are our resident non-Broadway performer, although Equity.
It sounds foolish, but we can't live in fear forever. And if we're vaccinated, then you've done your part and what you can do. So if the government, if the CDC is saying it's safe for us to be in those spaces, then we have to trust that science. I mean, I have a feeling like Ben was saying, because we're not going to be able to reach herd immunity because of a certain factor of society that refuses to get vaccinated. I think that what's probably going to happen is we're going to have to get booster shots every year, like the flu. It's going to be something like that. So, I mean, if we're not willing to go back when they say we can go back, then when are we going to go back?
Aside from being a performer, would you feel comfortable sitting in an audience with people all around you?
I mean, I would.
Yeah.
But I mean, I would probably have a mask on me as well for that. If I'm sitting there and someone starts coughing, I mean, like people do in the theater, I'll probably just be like...
Yeah, they may want to start giving out those cough drops. They do that at the opera, I will point out. Ben, how do you feel about this? And let's also point out, do you feel comfortable making a projection 4 months away? Because things change on a dime. So they can say everything's opening up September 14th. Do you believe that will actually happen?
Well, again, all I can comment on is here in California. Mm-hmm. I'm not a scientist. I don't know. I can barely tie my own shoelaces. But
oh, shut up! You can.
Okay, I can actually text you, but not. That's why we're loafers a lot.
Velcro helps a lot too.
Or just like our other two panelists, I just stay home in bed during the pandemic. And eat things.
Yeah, I know.
We don't know where things will be. None of us do. We can't predict. We've been wrong before. I remember early in this, Dr. Anthony Fauci getting up and saying that. He feared that at some point we might lose as many as 175,000 Americans to COVID. Well, we're about to stop 600,000. If not today, it'll be in the next few days. So we obviously don't know what the hell we're doing. In California, I think things are going to open up more for political reasons than anything else. And I think that's going to be the case in a lot of states across the country. South Dakota, they never closed. And you've heard that in Florida, they don't believe in COVID.
Ugh. Yeah. So, And Texas as well.
Yeah, well, they don't believe in a lot of things in Texas.
I mean, I got yelled at when I was in Florida for wearing a mask.
I did too.
I was walking.
You and I were very close to each other. You were just north of me. Yeah. And I was in a supermarket and somebody laughed at me.
Yeah, this guy yelled at me. He was like, fuck you. Like, blah, blah, blah. Take that thing off your face. And I was like, sir, you came up to me. Like, you were far away. Like, what is your problem? Like, people are, they don't believe it's happening down there. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I agree. Steve, how would you feel about being in an audience filled with people? Can you even imagine when that would be safe for you?
Are they cute?
Well, you know, they're Mark and Ben and me. So two out of three.
No problem. I would have no problem. You know, as long as I have a face, you have a place to sit.
I love you so much, Kometko.
I would have no problem. No. I think we're all, you know, being fully vaccinated, I just feel as though we've all been taking the right precautions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no problem.
Do you think that it will happen, that this September 14th date will happen? Or do you think that there is a chance that it's going to be delayed again? I mean, we could have a spike all of a sudden in the fall, I guess, but you can't predict.
Well, no, you can't predict. And we could have a spike again. And I wouldn't be surprised if we did. I mean, look at India, for crying out.
Yeah.
Or Michigan.
Yeah.
So if it does happen, we'll go back to wearing masks and just wait. But I'm not at all concerned right now.
You know, I was invited to a birthday party this weekend. Actually, I was invited to two birthday parties this weekend that were outdoors, on one in California, one in Florida. And it was going to be a lot of people, allegedly all vaccinated and outdoors. And I personally, because I've been staying with my parents through this pandemic, I only worry about bringing something home to them because they're older, obviously. But they've been vaccinated as well. But if I were living alone, I don't think I would give it much thought either. So I think it really depends. But keeping with Steve, the Golden Globes, Steve, your old stomping ground.
Yeah.
The Golden Globes have been canceled. Well, the telecast has been canceled. We don't know. It still may take place on another network or not televised. But NBC has said it is canceling it for next year. The Hollywood Foreign Press Association, as you all know, but Steve in particular, is a very small group of overseas journalists who have always had questionable taste, if you ask me, and lack diversity. There's like 90 people in it, and there are a number of people of color, defined as of color, but nobody is black. Even though a lot of black people have won Golden Globes, this is a problem. People have been calling for them to be boycotted. Tom Cruise and Scarlett Johansson have sent back their trophies in protest, which I think is a little bit of posturing and grandstanding. But what do I know? Steve, how do you feel about this?
For a long time, I've thought the Golden Globes are kind of a joke.
Yes.
Because it's like, what, 77, 78 members?
Yeah.
Who are things like waiters, cab drivers, things of that nature. It's not as though, you know, the reason that Hollywood caters to the Golden Globes is because it costs so damn much to make a movie these days. They're paying these exorbitant production costs and salaries. And so if they can cater to a foreign audience that helps defray those costs, that's why they have the Golden Globes. I mean, and I don't think the Golden Globes will be around at all much longer, because the organization depends on the funds they get from NBC,
right,
to stay afloat. So
so if it's not televised, they're not going to have any money.
Right. The mornings that they used to announce the nominations, mm-hmm. You could hear various members of the Foreign Press Association talking amongst themselves. And sometimes they would nominate people who they know would pull in a good audience, a good television audience.
So, right.
You know, a star may not have given a particularly good performance or one worthy of an award, but nevertheless, they'll nominate them because they know it's going to get that many more eyeballs.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that happened with the Academy Awards a couple of years ago, when they expanded the Best Picture category to include box office hits so that people would watch and think, oh, they have a chance, when it's going to be Frances McDormand's year again.
Yes, you got it.
I'm curious, for somebody who's such a Broadway person, Mark, what do you think about the Golden Globes? Does it matter to you? Do you not care about it? Are you willing to suck the dick of some foreign people to get in a movie?
Not me.
Okay. Just checking.
That won't be me. I haven't done a ton of TV and film work yet. So I don't care. But also that comment that you made about Scarlett Johansson sending her awards back the girl, she makes me giggle. She was playing a role that was like meant for like an Asian person in that like ghost, like, I'm like, you're taking roles away from minorities, and then you're gonna.
But take my Golden Globe back, right? I know.
Awards and those people, like, girl, bye. I have no time for that. Scarlett Johansson, sorry, that's foolish. She is foolish. I'm glad they're boycotting. I think it's a great thing. If they don't come back after this, good. Hopefully, that teaches other organizations lessons that's not how that you run things moving forward in the future.
You know, Ben, these criticisms of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association are nothing new. You've lived in Hollywood for a long time. You've heard it. It's been a joke for people in Hollywood for years. But certainly when Dick Clark was alive, it was really a prestigious thing for him, a big moneymaker, a precursor to the Oscars. But it always seemed to me like just a big commercial. I mean, what is your feeling about this?
Well, first of all, I echo a lot of what Steve said. He's been around this quite a bit, and he has great insight into that. To add to that, in terms of the television audience, I mean, did you see the ratings for the Oscars this year? They were miserable.
Tragic. Just tragic.
Awful. I think our attention.
Although all of the award shows, I mean, when, yeah, you know, it seemed like every show, Grammys, lowest ever, Oscars, lowest. I said, you know, I don't think anyone cares this year.
Well, the people at NBC aren't dumb. They know this. And that's why they've made this decision. But there is also the aspect you're talking about the rickety nature, if you will, of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. Over at the Oscars, you know, the big brother, they recently put some new policies into place that will force, literally, diversity in the years ahead. They will roll out over a couple of years, but the categories are changing and qualifications are changing. So we will be seeing a much more colorful and LGBT inclusive Oscar awards in the years ahead. Hollywood Foreign Press Association, no such thing. It remains that small little cabal of randoms that are making these decisions. And there's the enthusiasm is just not there the way it used to be. Steve is absolutely right.
Well, I think what was also great about the Golden Globes was that it did bring television and film together. And aside from the Golden Globes, you had the People's Choice Awards, and that was it. Although I don't think the People's Choice Awards is any more discerning a voting category population than the Golden Globes.
Well, at least there's a few more people voting.
Allegedly. Perhaps. Steve, you covered the Golden Globes a lot. Did people go to it feeling it was a joke, or did they take it seriously?
You know, I interviewed Robin Williams the year he was nominated, and I think won for Good Will Hunting. And he loved the Golden Globes, and I asked him why. And he said, because everybody's drunk.
Right. There's a table, there's a dinner, there's liquor.
Yes, and they get to, you know, mill around, and there's a bar in the room, and it's a much more casual setting at the Beverly Hilton. So he loved it for that reason, or so he said.
I always found that, you know, having gone to all the award shows, the Golden Globes was the best party in town.
Yes.
Of all of them.
And that's what a lot of this comes down to. It is a big party. Mm.
Meanwhile, Mark, you're still waiting for Tony Awards.
Oh, yes, I'm waiting for my nomination. Yes,
well, not you in particular, but does it bother you as a Broadway person that they're going to be voting on Tony Awards for performances they saw well over a year ago? I mean, it just seems ridiculous.
You don't even know what's going on with them. Like,
they keep announcing coming soon.
They disappeared. Like, it's all so strange. I mean, no one knows what's happening. They're not communicating. Nothing's going on.
Okay. Aside from the Golden Globes being canceled, Ellen is being canceled after a year of, certainly, and annus horribilis for Ellen. Now, I've always had an issue with Ellen, my own personal issue, because when her sitcom was canceled, about a year and a half, 2 years after she came out, she always felt that the show was canceled because she was gay and that she had come out. The show was canceled because the ratings had dropped. And as a matter of fact, when she came out, her ratings were higher than they had been. But after she came out, the show completely shifted and it became a show about a single woman coming to terms with being a lesbian and meeting new women, not about quirky Ellen hanging out with her friends. So history is repeating itself. Ellen is saying that this cancellation is because of attacks on her that felt orchestrated and misogynistic, and she is not taking responsibility for having a hostile work environment. So I'm curious, who do I go to first? Ben, I guess I'll put you in the hot seat first. What do you think about Ellen being canceled?
Well, I mean, shows don't go on forever. You know, they have a lifespan. True. And they end. And in terms of Ellen's ratings, we're not looking at the same sort of thing that we saw back with her sitcom. Her ratings are still decent.
Yes, they are.
She's ahead of quite a few other shows that will remain on the air. I've given this a lot of thought over the last couple of days since the news was coming down. And it's easy to make her the villain in this, but I think we should be a little slower to do that. I believe that it's a tough work environment over there. Enough people have come forward and said things. They're not just all making this up, and I don't believe there's anything orchestrated going on. That's ridiculous. I think she's probably a tough boss and probably one who doesn't have terrific managerial skills. She's been a star all along, and I don't think she's had to develop certain of the people skills that others might need, you know, in a similar position. That said, she's got to be tired of hearing all this stuff. And frankly, coming to a workplace that is toxic, even if you're the one that is beginning the toxicity, I don't think she's trying to be a bad guy. I don't think anybody does. But the result is a toxic work environment. And that's what I've heard from people I know that are over at that show. And so it's not fun anymore. She has more money than Jesus. Did Jesus have any money? And she doesn't need to do this any longer. It gets old. And she's getting old.
Yeah, well, I think that it seems to me, and I have not watched it regularly this year, but what I have seen feels very forced, which, of course, is also hard because you're doing a virtual show, and it's not it's not the show that it was, and I think she's like, why am I reinventing the wheel again? Steve, do you have any thoughts about this?
Yeah, one of the things that crossed my mind when I first heard about it, I don't think she's being canceled. She's ending it herself. So,
that's true.
Give her a little slack there. But I remember when Rosie O'Donnell brought her show to an end, one of the things she said was, how much money do I need? I have more money already than I could possibly spend in my lifetime. And Ellen has to be in that same category at this point. And it's got to be draining to do a show like that, every day of the year or weekends off, but she's got, I believe, I agree with Ben. I think she's got to be tired of the whole thing. And she did take a hit with all this negative publicity. I've never had a problem with Ellen. She was, she did something to me that was really very nice. After she hosted the Oscars, remember, the Emmys.
Emmys. Yes. I was there.
2001. They had to postpone it several times because of 9/11. And they finally staged it at what was the Schubert Theater in Century City. And she came out wearing a swan dress like Bjork did.
Bjork, yep. Thank you.
Very funny. And she did a bang-up job. And the very next night, I happened to be out for dinner with my boyfriend and his boss and his boss's wife. And Ellen happened to be eating at the same restaurant. And she, you know, I'd never really been introduced to her, but she came up and came over to my table and said hello to me and was very gracious to the people I was sitting with. And I just thought, wow, she's coming off a real high. She didn't have to come over and do that. I thought it was really nice. And so, you know, I'm willing to cut her a little bit of slack. Plus, I like Portia de Rossi. So,
yeah, I don't, you know, I have to say that I have met Ellen and Portia. Portia being a lot of fun, as I can attest to what Steve is saying. Ellen not being a laugh riot off stage, but very nice and nicer than somebody who is a bitch needs to be. It wasn't like she was trying to be nice overly and didn't have any clue who I was, but was pleasant enough, which is really all I ask for. And especially somebody that famous in a room. I think it was the Golden Globes where we met. Mark, any thoughts about this?
I mean, to kind of piggyback on what Steve and Ben have been saying, I mean, I mean, obviously she created a toxic work environment and she's responsible for that. And I'm not going to downplay anyone that comes forward with allegations because I think we need to believe people who survive trauma. I mean, but we also have to take a look at the fact that misogyny is real and thriving in 2021. And if she was a man, would people be saying the same things about her? So there's that whole aspect of it. But also I think people, especially with performers, people like we put people up on a pedestal, and when you don't live up to those expectations of like performing and putting on a show for people, people get disappointed. So when you're saying like, oh, she's a funny lady, she's this, but like off camera, she's different. I'm like, as they should be. I did a photo shoot with a photographer a couple years ago, and I showed up to his house and he was like, asking me, he's like, oh, you're doing a one-man show while you're down here? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, well, tell me about it. I was like, oh, it's just that kind of thing. I make jokes, whatever. And he goes, oh, you must be saving it all for the show. And I was like, do you expect me to perform for you right now?
Yeah, like, on now, right.
We're doing a photo shoot that's about my body. Like, you want me to be giving you, like, do you want me to cook dinner too? Like, what is, like, I think we expect too much of people off camera. And it's right. Kind of like if someone's kind and courteous, that should be enough. But to go beyond that, I think is where we need to draw the line. Like, yes, you should be nice to other human beings, not create toxic work environments. But if you're expecting Ellen from TV 24/7, that's exhausting for any human to be.
Right. No, I agree.
May I add one other thing?
Of course, Steve.
Credit. She has done an awful lot for the gay community. And she has made it a lot more accepting. People are more accepting. As someone who once lost a job simply because he was gay, I understand and appreciate what she has done. You know, she's made it okay to be gay. A lot of people, you know, still have a problem with that, even though this is 2021. And I think she deserves credit for that.
I agree. And Ben, we had talked about your book. This was kind of a topic in your book. Yeah, you had gone through a similar situation in a similar job to Steve, correct?
Indeed. Steve was at E, I was at Extra. But we went through the same sort of awfulness. Yours, you were more established there, Steve, than I was at Extra. I was the newbie coming in. But I want to thank you, Steve, for being present for me during that time and lending me an ear, you know, even though we were on competing shows and networks, as I tried to feel my way through this. This was, you know, more than two decades ago, and things have changed. But there is still a climate in Hollywood and in the entertainment industry that it makes it difficult to be out and gay. There was a recent article, I'm trying to remember the actress, who just got a big role where she's playing a lesbian. She's a straight actress. And she decided to open up about her experiences with other actors and other performers today in Hollywood and said that the climate of homophobia still very much exists. And agents and managers and the whole system is still not comfortable with us being out and open and speaking our truth. So I will join Steve in commending Ellen for all that she's done regarding visibility and acceptance over the years.
And Mark, you know, Broadway has always been much, you know, there is a perception that Broadway is all gay, which, of course, you and I know is not true. No. Certainly not on the business end. And homophobia still exists. It's kind of cloaked in a more clandestine way, but it exists. Have you found that being gay and openly gay and being openly gay and also showing off your body has been a good or a bad thing for you on Broadway? Well, on not Broadway, apparently.
Not Broadway.
yeah, and I guess you are a poster boy. It's all because you're gay that you haven't been true. On Broadway.
You know what? Let me write a book about it.
no, go ahead.
It's, I mean, take a look at gay roles recently on Broadway. I mean, there's The Inheritance, which I thought was a beautiful, beautiful piece. If you got to see
Andy
it.
Lopez,
one of the most important plays that have come out in a very long time. I sobbed my eyes out in the back of that theater. But like none of those leads were like, I think one maybe was gay out of the eight men that were portrayed in that show that were telling such like an important part of our history. I mean, so it's like straight people come in and play our roles, but then they won't let gay people play straight because they don't think it's convincing. And I'm like, it's just frustrating. People think, I mean, people think Broadway's very gay, but you're right, it's not. I mean, I was told by a casting agent that she didn't see me as leading man.
And is that code for you come off too gay?
Yeah. So, I mean, I mean, I stand a foot taller than everyone else in the room. You can't hide me in the chorus. Like, that's so true. Where are you going to put me besides the front? So it's kind of like it was the casting directors. I won't gender them because I don't want to give away who it might possibly be. But yeah, it was them being like, we don't see you as being able to play straight.
You know, that's been a topic in the news a lot. And we talked about it on this show before about the idea that do you have to be gay to play a gay role? And because I'm just sort of somewhat of a utopian kind of person, I will say the best actor should play that role, that it just should be that way. And I've gotten a lot of blowback that, well, that's not true because gay people can't even get into the room to get the opportunity. Has that been your experience? Or is that heard?
I mean, I think until gay men are being seen for roles and opportunities at the same rate, for anything and actually booking those roles, then at least let us play ourselves. Like, why are you giving our roles away to straight men? Well, these are stories that we can tell. They come from our history, our trauma. You know, like we can tell these stories really well, but you're still giving those to straight people. So it's kind of like, you know what I mean? Like, it's in a perfect world, the best actor for the role, absolutely. But until gay men and gay women and trans people are being seen for any other role and any other opportunity and actually booking those roles and getting those chances, then I don't think that straight people should be playing gay roles because it's not even. It's not equitable at this point in time.
In a perfect No, I agree. I see what you're saying. But there was criticism last week, Steve. This wasn't a topic that I said we were going to talk about. So forgive me if you're not prepared for this. But last week, Sarah Paulson got criticized because she is playing Linda Tripp for Ryan Murphy's series about Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton. And some people are saying that she was wearing a fat suit. Some people are saying she just gained weight. But most people were saying, why didn't they give the role to a fat actress? Are we saying by giving it to Sarah Paulson that fat actresses are not employable? I felt that Sarah Paulson's one of our greatest actresses. And if she is available and willing to play the role, give her the role. You can't give all the fat girl roles to Chrissy Metz. She's only can do so much. Steve, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think it gets to the point of the ridiculous. Did you see Sarah Paulson playing Marshall Lewis in the O.J. Simpson miniseries?
Yes.
Good in that.
And look nothing like her. I would never have seen her in that role, but she can do anything.
Yes, she's a very talented actress, and I think you've got to stop. You've got to draw the line somewhere. You know, James Corden shouldn't have played gay in what was that last movie he did?
The Prom.
Yes. The Prom, and that had nothing to do with him being straight or gay. I just didn't think he was good.
No. Awful.
There were moments that were fine, but on the whole, as a performance, I went, oh, I don't buy any of this. Right. I don't think he's a particularly good actor, to tell you the truth. No. I know, you know, he's won things and whatever, and I'm not going to be on his show. Benji, you know, do you have to be a serial killer to play Hannibal Lecter? And does this tell us something about Anthony Hopkins?
Yeah. Yep. I'm unfortunately, I have to disagree with Mark a little bit on this one.
I don't think
that LGBT roles are our roles. There's no proprietorship there. They are roles, period. And if I'm going to be an actor in Hollywood and I'm going to go play a cop, I don't need to be a cop to play that role. I have to be a strong actor. And I think the best person should get the job. Now, that said, I'm an LGBT activist, and I do believe there should be more opportunity for LGBT performers in all of the areas, both for you on stage in New York, Mark, as well as in television and film.
Or not in New York, maybe on the road.
Maybe so, wherever it is. And I think that we should work and we should be vocal and we should strive for that. But I don't think that we should hold roles hostage, if you will, and say, that, as you did, that until we see more LGBT representation among actors in the performing arts, that the role should not go necessarily to the best actor, but to an LGBT person. I don't follow you there.
Well, I kind of agree with Mark in the sense that LGBTQ performers are not as notable and as visible and therefore not invited to that final stage where decisions are being made.
But well, I looked at this...
Well, but the you know what? But the argument against the argument I just cited, so you know, I can I will argue with myself. I don't need any of you. Is that I looked at the Oscars today this year, and we keep hearing about how there are no female directors. Well, so a female director said, "I'm going to get a movie made," and made her own opportunities. And what I think is if you know, it's like this show. I didn't see a panel of gay men doing a show. Well, I didn't cry about that somebody should do it. I did it myself. And I know it's easy to say that, but I think a lot of the people who get considered for roles have really push themselves to that point that they're actually considered. Mark, anything?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. I mean, even if I was to sit around and complain that I wasn't being cast in things because I'm gay, which, I mean, let me be very clear, any role that I've ever been cast for in a tour has been playing a straight person.
I was just going to say, I can't think of a gay role you've played.
I haven't. I mean, give that some context. I'm not sitting around whining, being like, "Woe is me."
No.
But I will speak to situations that have been presented to me and to fellow actors who are very out and openly gay about that. I mean, but I agree with you. I think you should create your own opportunities, and I do that.
I was just going to say, look at what you've done. You were somebody who wasn't working, wrote and performed his own one-man show, shot and produced his own photography coffee table book, is the highest earner for Broadway Bears, and not ever appeared on Broadway. So, I mean, I think that if somebody on Broadway said, well, shouldn't only Broadway performers get to do Broadway Bears? Well, honey, hustle a little more and bring in a little more money. And you've really worked it. And I think maybe for gay performers, they have to work a little harder. But I also think the payoff is a little sweeter.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
All right, getting off of that, Kevin Spacey might, it looks like he, getting off Kevin Spacey, please. Speaking of gay actors. I know, sorry. Kevin Spacey is being sued for $40 million from an anonymous man named C.D. That's all we know about him. And The judge has ruled that unless CD goes public, the case is going to be thrown out of court. I think it's being thrown out tomorrow. And just for some context, CD was allegedly molested by Kevin Spacey several times when he was 14 years old. He is now over 50. And his lawyer says that this coming forward and identifying himself would cause him some trauma and irreparable harm to his mental health this many years later. I can sympathize with that, but I also think that if you're going to accuse somebody and name that accuser, you should have to stand up and also be named, because until it's proven in court, it's just an allegation, except for if you're a minor. Then I change my mind. Steve, any thoughts on this?
Did you say that he's now over 50?
He is 50 plus. I believe he's 55.
And he was molested when he was a teen?
14. But apparently there was a law that once you remembered this, if you file something within a year, the statute doesn't apply. I don't know. But at 50 something, I'm like, you know, you're not a teen anymore.
Well, it has me worried about my own past.
Yeah. Be very careful, Steve. Don't admit anything on this show.
I don't know. I have mixed feelings about this.
And I should say, I believe the allegations. I have no doubt that the allegations are true. But unless they're presented in a court of law, I don't think Kevin Spacey, it's fair on him to not be able to face his accuser publicly.
Yeah, I suppose you're right there. But I don't know. I plead the fifth.
Okay. Mark, what do you think?
I mean, yeah, that's it's a tough situation. I'm sure the allegations are true.
Right.
Unfortunately, I mean, too many people have come forward with stories about him. I think
our friend Anthony Rapp was one of the first people to come forward and talk about it. And again, not sue because he couldn't, because he remembered it. It wasn't repressed memory, but at least came public and was willing to stand up behind his accusations, which I think is the only fair thing to do.
Right. I mean, I really don't know what the right answer for that is. I mean, I think I will give you a different scenario. I think if the person was still a minor.
Yes, right. Then I don't think he has to be named.
An anonymous situation, it would be 1,000% okay.
Absolutely.
I just don't know about, I don't have an opinion about someone coming forward as an adult. But that's what I would say. If there was still a minor, protect the child's.
Yeah, that's what I feel too. Benji, what do you think?
Well, I'm going to have to break with the other two panelists again on the issue of whether Kevin Spacey is guilty. I have no knowledge of what he has done.
Well, we don't either.
Well, we've heard rumors. Rumors are sometimes true, and sometimes they're not true, even when there's a whole pile of them. The concept of a witch hunt does exist. Now, that said...
I suppose, you know, just jumping on what you were just saying, is that if this guy is willing to be anonymous, how do we know he's not somebody manufacturing something for money? We don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, common sense tells us that, I'm going to talk back on my own argument here.
It's all right.
That when you hear something over and over and over, as we in Hollywood have, both from people who have come forward like Anthony Rapp, but also just on the street, you know. You hear it in conversations at parties, over lunches, over this and that. Oh, Kevin Spacey, blah, 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 and blah, 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 and lots of colorful anecdotes. They pile up over the years, and you begin to have a sense of a character of a person. And in Kevin Spacey's case, his reputation is miserable.
Yes.
You know, in terms of the anonymity or not of the accuser, that's a really tough one for me, because you presented both sides of it well, I think, Billy.
Yeah,
thank you. In that people have been in trials recently, either in front of Congress or in criminal trials, who have named the person they believe it wronged them, And they ended up victimized, lambasted by the press, by the public, by the people questioning them right in the hearings and the trials.
And losing their careers and earning potentials.
Yes, yes. But that said, Kevin Spacey has some rights here, and we in America allow you to see your accuser. We don't let a trial stand on rumors and supposition. We let you defend yourself reasonably. And
right.
As much as my heart tells me, Kevin's not a great guy. I do think he deserves the presumption of innocence.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that the judge has made the right call in a difficult decision, and it is up to, I can't even say the boy, the man, the 50-something-year-old guy, if he is willing to stand up for himself and he can work on that in therapy, then good luck. But if not, it is what it is. I'm going to wrap with a story that just makes me laugh a little bit. Bill and Melinda Gates are getting a divorce. And apparently, Mark, this will be right up your alley. Apparently, Bill has been in a touring company of Same Time Next Year for decades. That every year he has met up with this woman and spent a week or a weekend with her, with Melinda's full knowledge, and he's had this situation. So I'm curious, you guys, could you be in a relationship knowing that somebody was going off every week to spend a week with an ex-lover and whatever happened, happened? And Ben, since I just talked to you, I'm giving you this easy one.
I'll tell you, I couldn't stomach it myself.
Yeah.
I get, when I'm with somebody, I get jealous if they give too much attention to the dog. what about me? I don't think I could hack that. If I were Melinda, it would tear me up. And
and apparently it was with her knowledge. So I don't think that's the reason for the breakup, yeah, but it's an interesting.
I couldn't sustain it.
Mark, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think any relationship is built on whatever rules you decide it to be for yourself. And clearly she allowed that to continue. Because she knew of it. If it was a problem, she would have ended the relationship.
But could you do it?
Personally, I like to always tell myself that I could be in like an open relationship, and then push comes to shove, and I'm like, get away from my man.
Yeah, we backstage before we started, I told Mark this situation that I had been in that was fine when my feeling is kind of like people who stay in my apartment and they will ask me, can I do this or that or have people over, whatever? And this is what I always tell them. If I can't tell when I come back what happened, it's fine. If I'm going to come back and see remnants or whatever, don't do it. That's just, but I also have a counter argument, which is that the Williams sisters, Venus and Serena Williams, are really great playing mixed up or doubles with people, but that doesn't mean they don't want to play with other people's balls. So, Steve, speaking of balls, what do you think? Could you handle this?
No, I probably wouldn't be good in that kind of a relationship. But I tell you, if my husband was the third richest man in the world, I could put up with a lot.
I think that, yeah, I think Melinda, you know, I'm curious what each of them will do coming out of this and really what's happening. I really want to know what's the reason.
He looks like such a nerd.
I don't see him as a player, but they're the ones that you got to watch.
When you got money, people do a lot of things.
Well, women respond very differently than men do, and especially gay men.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. I will say that when I talk to people, and I have a lot of straight friends that I grew up with that I'm close to, and when I say, you know, I will forget who I'm talking to. And I will mention either going to an underwear party or being friends with the porn star, whatever. And people be like, what? Huh? Who? And You know, what just kind of rolls off our backs, and I guess there are gay people who aren't in those positions that probably are horrified by that as well. Mark and I were talking earlier. I had mentioned that I've dated porn stars, I've dated strippers or hookers or whatever, and I never would have thought that I would have been okay with that. And things, when you're in love, things are different. What can I say? Anyway, I want to thank all of you, my wonderful guests. This was so much fun. I can't believe an hour and 15 minutes went so fast. Steve, what are you doing over there with your finger?
My phone is ringing. There we go.
Oh, my God. He's getting better people. He told them I'd be done by 1:15, and they already are calling.
Hey, can I ask Mark a question?
You can, yeah. Please. Any question? I'm opening it up to the floor. Go ahead.
That artwork over your left shoulder, is that the Mona Lisa as done by Botero?
It is. Well, it is, yeah. I was in Madrid on vacation, and I went to the Prado museum, and someone was selling like a make of a Botero of the Mona Lisa.
Very funny.
So she makes me giggle. I like her a lot.
Ben, I wanted to ask you, because you had gone through, you've been very public about going through some things the past few years, and coming through the other side. I haven't seen you in person. You obviously look great. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Like Steve, I'm in the program, and we are a little cautious when we talk about that in the media sometimes, but sure. I'm in recovery from substance use. Crystal meth was my drug of choice, and it nearly killed me. But I've struggled. And
for how long, if I can ask?
For 5 years, I struggled with it.
Okay.
And it was very, very difficult. But I'm trying my best, as I do in all areas of my life, to use both the successes as well as the tough experiences to inform what I say, how I present myself, and to be an example. Whether it's a good example or a bad example, you get to see this, and you know, hopefully you can learn from it.
Yeah, you've posted a lot of really revealing things on social media and reached out to people who may need help in, you know, as a source of knowledge or what your experience was. And I think that's great that you're able to do that.
One, may I just take a moment also before we wrap with me to commend Mark on the stuff that you've done with Broadway Bears and how you've leveraged in your own way, your talents, your skills, your beauty, and worked it for good. There you go. See? And thank you, Mark, for your contributions with that.
And can I just point out, it is a very good ploy to be sitting next to the Botero, because I believe it was in the Renaissance that ugly women would walk around with monkeys on their shoulder, because you'd look and say, well, next to the monkey, she's a looker.
Billy, so,
my plan.
Oh, well, there you go. If only I had a monkey handy. Anyway, what were you saying, Mark?
It makes me happy. I am happiest when I'm helping other people. So service is one of my love languages. I think we've all been given things in life, and if you don't use them to help other people, then I don't know, it's kind of a meaningless existence. So I'm happy to, if people are happy to look at me in my underwear, I'm happy to take their money and give it to an organization that is going to do a lot of good with it. So that's the least I can do.
And while we're throwing compliments around Steve, we talked about Ellen being a trailblazer, but really, so were you. I mean, one of the first people in media to come out and be a leader. You know, you're a very private person. When I knew you very briefly in LA until before you moved, but you were not somebody who really was very public when you were not on. And to have come out must have been a very hard hard thing for you to do, but I think you did it. We've talked about it before. You did it for the right reasons. And I really applaud you on behalf of a lot of people who I'm sure you helped.
Oh, thanks very much. It was difficult with a Baptist minister father and a mother who we called the Virgin Alice. coming out publicly was kind of difficult. But when you date somebody like Greg Louganis, people kind of assume.
That is true. And again, I should say, not a bad looking couple.
Thank you.
And I hate to bring it down to that, but, you know, it certainly didn't hurt the story. But anyway, you've all been great and such inspirations to me for so many years, and I'm glad to call all you friends. So please, thank you all. Ben Patrick Johnson, Steve Kometko, Mark McKillop. If you hang backstage, I will see you after I sign off. But if you have to go, that's fine. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye. And thank you all for watching Billy Masters Live. Next week, God only knows who's going to be. Oh, my God. We didn't even talk about. Oh, we had another story. Oh, they're all looking at me like, is he going to come back and ask us about this story? I'm not. I'm going to save it for next time. Anyway, thank you for watching Billy Masters Live. We will see you here next Thursday. And just remember, if we're here, we're live. Bye, guys.